Okay. Let's pull up a mental chair. In fact, pull up a physical chair or a couch. Or if you're out walking in the future listening to this on an iPod or some such recording device through an MP3 download, if you subscribe, welcome. I'm glad you're here. This is going to be another very important, very unusual program. This is my 10th special program on Morgellons disease, Morgellons syndrome, Morgellons affliction, Morgellons complex, whatever you want to call it. It is, in fact, a real new physical disorder. If you want to call it a dis-ease, you may. We think it is something more sinister than that in some respects. There have been some people who have been involved with this, of course, for a long time. And leading the pack is Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Ph.D. She is a toxicologist. She is the author of the international environmental bestseller, The Comprehensive Handbook on Hazardous Material Regulations, Monitoring, Handling, and Safety. This is truly a classic. It is a benchmark book in the field of industrial toxicology. She pioneered the use of biological monitoring tests for targeting organ exposure to parent compounds, metabolites, and other xenobiotics. Her research has opened the door of proteinomics, enzymomics, and genomics as recognized by Johns Hopkins University and the Pandy Lab and Harvard University Medical College Small Molecule Genome Project. Talk about prestige. They don't get much better than Dr. Hilde. She has been researching Morgellons for well over a year now, utilizing her training as a toxicologist, and her first findings were those of silicon in the tissue from one of our guests to come up a little later, Jan Smith's knee after surgery to replace that knee, and high-density polyethylene in a fiber from a woman's leg. During the fall of 2006, phase 1, and spring of 2007, phase 2, she conducted a privately funded project to identify the composition of Morgellons fibers, which, as you know, come in a grab bag of colors. There are five or six of them that we know about at this point in time. The original research revealed the environmental impacts upon humankind, the environment, and other life forms. Other life forms. We're not the only folks that apparently get this from exposure to nanotechnology. Now, when I talk about Morgellons, as you longtime listeners know and you newcomers need to know, I'm not talking about bacteria or viruses. We're talking about what appear to be nanotechnology devices, machines, nanotechnology constructs that are designed to do something. We don't know what yet, but we're working on it. The full report is posted on Rents.com. You can look at it. Please go to my homepage under Morgellons articles and entitled Project FMM. So with that, let's welcome our first guest tonight. She'll be with us for most of the evening, Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Ph.D. Hiya, Doc. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for asking.
Well, I'm glad, and I'm glad you're back with us tonight. Let's do something fun here.
Okay.
First, before I get to my real first question, let's do a preliminary question. Let's define for people out there what a doctor of toxicology does. What do you do, Hilde, and why are you competent and qualified to interface with the Morgellons mystery as much as you have?
Well, a toxicologist is one who studies poisons. But in particular, the poisons that I study are industrial chemicals and their effects on living organisms. The toxicologist is specialty trained to examine the nature of these adverse effects, including their cellular, biochemical, and molecular mechanisms of action, and to assess what is the probability of how it came about, how was it made, How did it come into this living form, this living life form?
Or in the case of Morgellons, this mechanically living life form, if that's what it is, if it's a machine. And defining nanotechnology for you folks, just do a Wikipedia search or look up the word nanotechnology. It is literally the constructing of little machines, atom by atom or molecule by molecule. And it's a remarkable technology which has at once great promise and, of course, the potential to literally wipe out on this planet all life forms. I mean, it can be used for almost anything. It is, it's the true genie in the box. And is it the Pandora's box, or is it the box of promise and a wonderful future for humankind? Well, if the defense research community gets its hands on it, which is, it has, of course, it doesn't look too encouraging over the short term, because these people always take technology and try to find out new ways of either subjugating, suppressing, controlling, obfuscating reality, or killing people. You choose. It's or all of the above. It's one of those things. So as far as Morgellons goes, Dr. Staniger, being a professional toxicologist in a way qualifies you far better than most anyone in the normal institutionalized medical scientific community to look at these things. You have that kind of mind. You have that kind of approach to taking a look at these issues, not through the filter of virus, not through the filter of a bacteria, not through the filter of antibiotics, but through the filter of something and almost anything that can be different.
Correct. Anything that could cause ill health effect on whatever the living form was, meaning
right.
whether it was a tree, whether it was a human being, whether it was a dog or a cat. The other thing is with toxicology, as with many fields, they get subspecialized. They get specialized in either a genetic, industrial, well, industrial goes also chemical, mechanistic, meaning how does the compound break down? What are the mechanisms within the organ systems that
right.
cause the effect?
Right, right.
And several other areas.
Right. I wouldn't call it biological in the outset. But ultimately, it is biological because you're interfacing with living organisms, living
right.
cells. But
Correct.
You're looking for things that are of a petrochemical, just a general chemical. And also now we're looking for things from the world of nanotechnology, which quite literally is exploding beyond any reasonable effort to control it. And there really is no way to control it because so many companies and countries are involved in research. Is that a fair statement?
It's very fair. When we first did the first program with myself and Dr. Carju, I think there was only like 80 companies, 80 products out there.
Right.
Now it's, I don't know if it's 100,000 or a million. I mean, it's a phenomenal number for just basically 1 year, 2 weeks later.
It's running absolutely rampant. And there was a call a couple of months ago from a group of some of the world's foremost scientists for oversight over nanotechnology and nanotechnological devices, nanotechnology research, nanotechnology development. Well, it was nice to see that, but I think we both know realistically and pragmatically that's not going to happen.
Not in a timely manner, I
no,
don't think.
No, not at all.
I've seen just in my own related field how long it takes for responses to occur or anything, meaning some of these individuals that have been affected and at the same time their properties or their animals or any of that, they can't wait a year.
No, they can't.
Tell them what they're going to do.
Of course not. These are Morgellons victims. Now, the other side of that coin is in talking about nanotechnology research, which again is running absolutely rampant around the globe. There's no possible way for oversight or to pull these people in from 80 or 90 or 100 countries and have them agree to follow certain protocols of research. It won't happen. You've got military-industrial complex monies from multiple nations being poured into this to try to gain an advantage over what they perceive to be their enemies. Of course, we're all fighting against each other as the same species, which is ludicrous at the outset. But this whole thing of nanotechnology is, in my humble estimation, the Pandora box wide open, and the evil genies are now on the loose. I mean, anything can happen. And as I learned years ago from Douglas Mulhall, the nanotechnology expert, he said, you know, Jeff, I hate to tell you this, but I have to tell you the truth. And this guy is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He said, two of the simplest things to build, atom by atom, are little nanotech machines that have as their sole function the utter destruction and deconstruction of living cells. That's what they do. That's
right.
All they do. That's, I mean, if you can Think about it, ladies and gentlemen. That is the end of life as we know it on the planet. That's how easy it is to do. And yes, these things have no doubt been constructed in laboratories. They're probably on the shelves of maybe dozens of them around the world. It's a very dangerous thing. What we have with Morgellons appears to be a clear manifestation of nanotechnology either gotten loose or intentionally sown amongst living organisms, and not just human beings. Just because our friendly raccoons and dogs and cats don't come to us and say, gee, my skin feels like it's crawling, and I don't feel well, and I have other Morgellon symptoms, doesn't mean they don't have it. So we'll be back. We also do know that these fibers, these incredible nanotechnology fibers that Morgellons victims usually, but not always, manifest, are having now clearly been shown to move. They're not static. They move. They have intelligence. So anyway, we'll get to all this and much more with Dr. Hildegard Steininger in just a couple of minutes. Stay right there. Big program tonight. Okay, and welcome back. If you click on Dr. Hildegard Steininger's name, you'll go to a page of her bio, her CV. You'll see explained right there all about her work and what she does. If you have any other questions about that, there is some confusion in the Morgellons community now. Without naming names or pointing fingers, Hildy, where is the Morgellons community right now in terms of cohesion, single focus approach to trying to resolve this issue, or is it becoming more and more fragmented? And if so, are there any suspicions related to such fragmenting? I mean, we both know, and all of you listening know, I think at this point, the government has been stonewalling on this to a very large degree.
Yes, they have been moving very slow. If you're talking about CDC and
Correct.
That whole group,
right.
Yes. And at the same time, I honestly don't know. I know that they're going to do that study, but I don't know how you get involved with that study. Because even some patients have asked me, who do you apply to? Where do you go? How do you get on their list?
Well, don't ask me, folks, because I don't know either. And the CDC, I think, if anything, our programs here have forced the CDC to at least make the announcement that it has appointed a task force to study Morgellons. Where that goes, if it goes, is anybody's guess. We know how the CDC often conducts itself. It completely covers things up. It'll literally produce data to match its conclusions. That's the game it plays. So I'm not too optimistic about this. I am optimistic about the work that you're doing, Hildy. So tell us.
I appreciate that.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You very much.
For our listeners who don't know, just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of what Morgellons is and the more common symptoms. And for those of you who think that, gee, I've got these lesions on my skin, but I don't have fibers sticking out, these colored fibers, so I don't have Morgellons. Well, that's not necessarily true. So tell us, Hilda, if you would, just in a few sentences,
right.
or
they
whatever
may,
you need.
They may have lesions that not necessarily have the fibers, as you stated. They may not even have gel or something that's very hard, like a glue coming out of their pores. They may have, around those areas, or especially on their cheeks, little granules that feel like sand. And when you use different soaps, they come out, or gels come out. At the same time, they usually run about, I have a questionnaire which has 93 different symptoms on it, and usually if a person has half of those symptoms, they usually
93.
At the and in that, what I've been finding a lot, as with what has been stated by earlier people who have been on your show investigators, that there is always, the majority has a link to some kind of water problem, where a pipe busted or it came through somehow.
Or they were in polluted waters.
Correct.
Whether it be agricultural, let's say you went wading in a dirty stream, swimming in a dirty lake. And the connection there is, of course, that these things may have come from the sky at some point and have been there waiting for the unsuspecting mm-hmm. person to stick his or her foot in it, correct?
Correct. Correct. Okay. Correct.
Now, as far as the general description of this disease, it was actually named Morgellons in 5 or 6 years ago, talking about a range of cutaneous symptoms, skin conditions. People who suffer from this unexplained syndrome report, and you've heard it before here, and you've probably seen it. You might have seen it on a local television news story. There are a few of those around. Report a crawling or a biting or a stinging or an uncomfortable sensation in their skin. There's something about that area of skin that doesn't feel right, and they start picking at it. It bothers them. Finding fibers on or under the skin is common, but not necessarily indicative of, it's not mandatory to have Morgellons. There are skin manifestations. We've seen photographs where there's just a lump, and then the person will pick at it, and it'll turn into an open, kind of just a wet, gooey spot. But it won't get infected. It doesn't bleed, and it won't scab over in a normal brown kind of scab that you get when you cut yourself. It just doesn't happen. There are also many complaints about mental problems. People talk about not being able to think clearly. They talk about brain fog. They talk about an inability to bring words forward that they want to use, short-term memory loss, sometimes joint pain, changes of vision, eye problems. There are, like you say, 90-plus symptoms now for Morgellons.
Yes, and at the same time, meaning originally a lot of individuals thought it was a biological source, but after we found our results and received them from Lambda Lab and Woods Hole, which was on the phase two of Project FMM,
right.
It was a two-part polyester resin, which is basically nylon. And these are chemicals. At the same time, another person had high-density polyethylene fiber, which was, because it was in a long rod shape, we called it a fiber. But all of them break down into other chemicals such as carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide, which if we were in our garage, we'd go to sleep if we were breathing those vapors.
Permanently.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hold on. I'll be right back with Dr. Staniger. And we're doing our 10th special on Morgellons. A lot to talk about tonight. And we'll see where this goes. It's absolutely fascinating. It is frightening. I wonder how many people have it. We don't know for sure. Many people wouldn't recognize it if they did have it because they've never heard of it before. So we have that issue to deal with, too. All right, back in just a couple with Dr. Hilde. Okay, back with Dr. Hildegard Staniger, our 10th Morgellons special program. Hilde, since the first program, we're going to talk about your new paper just presented in just a minute, but since our first program and all the people we've had on, all the doctors, all the victims, all those who have made contributions here, how much progress have we made? Where are we now since we first launched into this on the radio?
Well, since you first launched into it on the radio, of not knowing what it was, we had definitive analytical results that showed that plastic was found. These compounds are being used in the manufacture of nanotechnology, which starts out at nano level, but as it accumulates in the body, because it's self-replicating and it also, I'm going to say, programmed to connect to each other, it ends up making a physical bigger item than what originally started with.
Okay.
We've come a long way. I know there's companies out there like Quantum Tech Solutions that is actively looking at building sensors and devices to help the medical community and help these individuals find it, like the fibers or whatever is growing in them, where it's located in their organs and how it can be removed without causing any harm to them.
Some
because they considered it the best unknown that they've ever seen.
I should think so. Frightening unknown. The issue of how the lesions manifest themselves. There's a story up today, KENS TV, I think in South Texas. where they have a lot of Morgellons people. And by the way, just to go retro for just a minute, we don't know how many folks out there have it, do we? We have no idea. It could be millions.
It could be definitely, because I know that at least from the United States and places that I have traveled in the last year, it's sort of all over that I've seen.
I agree. It's it knows no bounds. It apparently is communicable and probably easily spread among some people. Does a strong immune system seem to have much to do with the resistance to this, or to keep it at a lower level of infestation in the body?
I feel if you've taken care of your body where you have always maintained some kind of nutrient supplement, or use proper equipment or anything that helps in keeping longevity, you're at a better chance than individuals that have not.
Right.
Because this in the recent weeks, which is a part of the paper I did, it basically suffocates the cells when it's in the gel phase. At the same time, if you have healthy cells, you can respire longer. And at the same time, I feel that because of the relationship of trying to get any pollutant out of the body, the body has to eliminate it.
Right.
So if the mechanism of elimination, and I'm not talking fecal elimination or urination, if the mechanism of sweating or anything to get it out of the pore, because the pores are blocked under the skin,
mm-hmm.
then it's harder to get it out.
Got it. Now, these Morgellon symptoms over 90 are primarily manifested, though, among people in four or five different primary configurations. One are those gristle-like formations that are like hardened fat, but they're kind of roundish, round-looking items, clear-colored, if you will, or white. Sometimes they have fibers associated with them, sometimes they don't. Then there are the fibers themselves, of course. Then there are the lesions, which are just, again, open wounds on the skin that do not heal. Then there is the interior or internal aspect of Morgellons infestation, which involves apparently all the major organs of the body. And then, of course, there is the neuropsychological aspect of it, which can impede brain function and neurological performance, which caused the Oakland A's pitcher Billy Koch, of course, to lose his career. His family got it, his wife got it, his three kids got it after he did. In his case, it really hit him neurologically. So it can manifest itself in many ways. Do you feel, Hildy, that even though people may not have fibers or a lot of skin lesions, but they have other symptoms of Morgellons, which may not have manifested themselves in the skin, that they are among the most tragic of those afflicted, because they really don't know? They might say, oh, I've got fibromyalgia, oh, I've got chronic fatigue, when in point of fact, these fibers, and maybe other forms, seem to go internal to the entire body, do they not? And then perhaps later on manifest at the skin level?
Correct. A colleague of mine who's a comparative biologist, we have had discussion on this. Both of us have seen that in joints where you think you have arthritis, that if you massage it and squeeze it so that you're sort of cutting off a little of the blood flow there, just to cut off the oxygen a little bit, then you use the soap, then very odd things come out of that area through the pores, meaning more of a, I'm going to call it a creature versus not as a gel. But it's all man-made.
Uh-huh.
It compounds. Yeah. It's like if I have a transformer toy, it can do its thing and do its action. If I put a higher intelligence in it, being put a computer chip or something to make it have a brain now, it could do more stuff, but it's still got metal and plastic with it.
So these Morgellons machines, to begin with, whatever form they take, whether it's a fiber or something you can't even see, because these are nanotech devices, and that's the most logical, that these in their transmissible stage are not even seeable with the naked eye. They're too small. But then they begin to, as you said, replicate themselves. They have an ability to use the body's own vast treasury of nutrients. however you want to look at it, and they begin to manufacture themselves, whether they're using the body's silicon, the body's magnesium, its minerals, its vitamins, it doesn't really matter. They can pretty much do almost anything, and they will apparently take on different configurations in the body depending upon the condition of the body itself, correct?
Correct, correct.
All right. I don't mean to be speaking so much, but I want to get to the issue of your paper as quickly as we can, which we'll do next. Presented at the National Registry of Environmental Professionals, the 2007 annual conference, September 6th, just happened, San Antonio, Texas, written and submitted and presented by Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Ph.D. And we'll talk about that and see a couple of photographs next. Okay, back and talking with Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Ph.D., who presented a major paper at the 2007 annual conference, the National Registry of Environmental Professionals. All right, tell us about the paper, Hildy. This is what they call, ladies and gentlemen, a peer-reviewed paper. It'll be in the journal, and it is going to attract an awful lot of attention. The title of the paper is Morgellons, a Nano 9/11 Foreign Invader. Go ahead, Hildy.
Yes, the paper was presented at the National Registry of Environmental Professionals at their annual conference because environmentalists are the ones that are going to have to clean up this mess from the environment. The in reference to the Nano 911 foreign invader, our cells do not allow foreign invaders to come in. Foreign invader is a compound or a substance that is not common to the cell. And when it comes in, you have specific mechanisms to get rid of that foreign invader and to protect the cell. But if these mechanisms are hindered, example like we call it the immune system, or you're vitamin deficient, or you don't have your minerals, or you're not getting enough oxygen in the cell, you have oxidative stress, then the cell is not functioning properly. And in this whole presentation that I did, I explained how xenobiotics could be formed from these foreign invaders, which are xenobiotics. There are other chemicals that come from the original compounds that were introduced to the cell. And these compounds are readily absorbed through the skin, the lungs, gastrointestinal tract, as I stated earlier in your program. The importance is that foreign invaders love to go around the lymphatic portion, the lipotrophic form of the cell membrane.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process is where the fat is,
mm-hmm.
meaning like the vitamins, vitamin E like elephant, vitamin
mm-hmm.
A like apple, D
mm-hmm.
and K are located on the inside of the cell
mm-hmm.
versus our zinc and copper, which is with our superoxide dismutase. Vitamin C is on the outside of the cell. The thing is that when a foreign invader comes in and interacts with that lipophilic reaction of those chemicals, it inhibits the vitamins in the inside of the cell, or it totally suffocates the cell so it will not allow respiration to occur. When that happens, the cell cannot eliminate the toxin. And that's what's happening with the majority of the people that I have seen that have this disease, Morgellons. As with many other healthcare providers talking about.
So their toxicity levels build.
Yes, correct. It builds. And it not necessarily it's coming out of, as I said earlier, fecal or urine matter.
I understand.
But we're talking the whole elimination process.
Mm-hmm.
And if it stops, that's one problem. But in our bodies, we have what they call phase one and phase two conjugation processes. This means that there is something in our body that is used to stimulate or to stop these compounds, these antibiotics. And these are usually enzymes. There's specific enzymes that come in to make it not as toxic as what the original compound is, or sometimes they come out the enzymes and make it more toxic. In this case, making it less toxic, and these enzymes are usually, majority are associated in the liver. And number one, problems with a lot of these individuals have had bile duct problems where it swells and their liver swells or their stomach extends as if they were pregnant, male or female.
Are we talking about the ramifications of either these gristle-like self-replicated formations, the fibers themselves growing into masses which create irritation in, say, the bile duct, which could cause an inflammation, a reaction?
That's a physical, what you're talking about, when these keep replicating and cause a physical trauma or a physical blockage of that area
and
or tightening
reaction
of that,
yeah.
That mm-hmm. is a physical effect. What I'm specifically talking about is that each one of these self-replicating compounds, which are nanomaterials, they create other compounds. These other compounds, or the original parent compound, which is the chemical that they were made out of, mm-hmm. or the substance, they cause a reaction in the body. And this stops enzymes to come out, which is used in phase 1 and phase 2 conjugation, mm-hmm. and they cannot break it down. Mm-hmm. Thus, you have mm-hmm. buildup, no elimination, and what happens? The first thing that happens is you swell. You have tiredness. You have fatigue. Fatigue where you sleep consistently. Yeah. Now, are you sleeping because you don't have enough oxygen in your body, or do you have some biological in your body, or is it because, as I stated earlier, these compounds break down into carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. And the first
just
test,
what the body doesn't need. Yeah.
Right. And the first test of that, we have a compound which we use, Dasvasser, which is just a high noble metal with excelsior water in it, basically. And as soon as you spray it on these individuals that have the carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide, they turn pink and red.
Huh.
But they stay pink and red for 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that's the first sign, you know, of carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide, or loss of vitamin B3, which if you have ammonia buildup in your body, which if these nanomaterials were building in the kidney or in those areas of the bladder, mm-hmm. you would have a lot of problems in those organs.
Mm-hmm.
And many chemicals in the industrial setting are what we call target organ specific. Example, our magic markers that are out there in the world, the permanent type, are made of ethylene glycol monobutyl ether. That compound loves to go to the respiratory system. We have also, nitrosamines, which love to go to the brain or the nervous system.
Well, nitrosamines, of course, are, mm-hmm. are known carcinogens, you bet. Yeah.
Correct. And see, what the mechanisms that cause cancer are usually either a direct hit from a compound that caused some kind of mutagenic activity, or that compound hit a fungal or a mycotoxin that was inside your body, or an endotoxin that created the mechanism for cancer, or the viruses, or any of the other, there's about five different mechanisms that it can occur. The thing is that in that whole process, you're losing light. You're being taken away, your life force within it, okay, because of the mechanism of that disease. But at the same time, in the reference to the Morgellons, the individuals that I've seen and talked to, they have it where it's all-encompassing back to that high conductivity and generating a battery.
Huh. Wow.
Meaning so, the energy field.
Yeah, sure, I got you. So there's clearly a bioelectric interference or a bioelectric involvement of this. It has to
right.
be. We're going to down to the neurological level as well. This would cause, the brain is an electrical organism. It's not a chemical organism. And this would be a clear indicator of people who have brain fog, short-term memory loss, etc.
Correct. Because when you have even just a hangnail on your hand, and it got a little red and got a little infected, or
yeah.
just a little irritating, that is enough to change everything going on in your body to work not properly.
People don't understand that. They also don't understand that 1 minute of anger And rage can compromise and screw up your immune system for up to 8 hours, mm-hmm. folks. That's should be a lesson. Now, I saw another television news story today, and I saw a woman with Morgellons lesions. And it's the same thing. It's a slight raised area, and it itches, and it tingles or whatever, and then they scratch it, and it oozes, and it's got that goo. But it never gets infected. They don't get infected easily, if at all. Now, do we know any more about that?
Well, there has not been any specific tests done on that, but from just the mechanisms of the immune system and how a cell will get rid of a foreign invader, that if that cell is not stimulating the immune system, thus not stimulating the white blood cells to come out and respond as the soldiers.
So if the cell is not sending out a distress signal or a help signal,
it's not going to send those soldiers out, and those soldiers are what we commonly see as pus or any inflammation.
The white blood cells, of course.
Right, and it even can go into an abscess, because many of these wounds look like it was an abscess, but there's, as I said, no white, matter or any blood. The thing is, with the blood, now that goes back to the way these gels or microgel or even the silicone is, that it goes between the cells. So if you go between the cells and you really never injured the cell as in structure, you just suffocate it.
Got it.
Or take away from it. And who knows, you could be, flea and tick dip your dog all the time and turn around. That's enough chemicals to make some of this stuff grow in your body because it's all petroleum-based.
I see.
But the thing is, so meaning those pollutants are in your body. The whole thing is that if it's just suffocating and going in between every crack and crevice within the makeup of your body, and it just goes through that whole thing like a gel, you're not going to have function. You're not going to be able to send the nutrients to the other areas of the body.
I understand. It is bizarre to see so many pictures of these lesions and see no infections. And that's a very interesting explanation. When we come back, we have a break coming up. I want to ask you to address, there is a bit of a split in the Morgellons community now. There is a group, maybe several groups, but there's group A, which adheres to the nanotechnology explanation, or certainly genesis of this problem, or many of the problems associated with these over 90 symptoms. And then there's a group that is suggesting these are parasites or worms of some kind. They're parasites in the skin, and they're in other words, they're trying to identify them as nematodes and worms and other kinds of biological life forms. And if you can address that when we come back, Hildy, that would be very interesting, and I think very important as well. Okay, so is it nanotech or is it parasites, worms? Back in a minute with Dr. Hildegard Steniger, Ph.D. Okay, let's get right into hour number two of our 10th unprecedented special on Morgellons disease, syndrome, affliction, infection, whatever you want to call it, Morgellons. Maybe it won't have a second word after its title. That would be appropriate in my book, Morgellons. Dr. Hildegard Steniger, Ph.D., is with us. We have three more guests to go in the next 2 hours, so stay tuned for that. Hildy, there are a lot of people who, I get emails. We've seen this. You deal with it all the time. You have a new clinic open in Los Angeles where you are willing to consult with Morgellons patients, and we're going to tell people about that. They'll be standing at your door within a week. I have a pretty good idea.
Well, they'll be welcome.
Yeah, well, that's sweet of you. You're a real hero. So, bacterial infection of the skin, uh-uh. Worms, nematodes, parasites of the skin, uh-uh.
No.
But there's a schism in the Morgellons community. Why isn't this a bacterial or a worm parasite infestation?
Well, in the earlier program, we sent the photographs and specimens that we received, not meaning directly that I received, other individuals sent it to the American Society of Parasitology, and they looked at the specimens and they said, one, it did not have eukaryotic cell mechanisms. It was not biological. It was not...
So no virus, no bacteria. Forget
it. Well, no. What it's saying is that if you're going to be like a parasite, like a worm,
okay,
or even if it's a nematode, you have to have cell structure. You have
sure
to have a cell membrane. You have to have a nucleus.
Yep.
This material had nothing. It was just like one big mass, okay? And then the other is with bacteria, viral or fungal in some private individuals, not myself, pardon me, but individuals that have had it tested,
mm-hmm,
they have come back with etiology saying that it's not a bacteria, we don't know what it is, or it's not a fungus, it's something else. It doesn't match what is there, even if they did genetic testing. It doesn't match what the genome has on,
okay,
say, Aspergillus or whatever,
mm-hmm,
it may be.
Mm-hmm. Got
and
it.
So where I'm saying is, okay, if it doesn't match it totally, does it match it a part of it, say, like, mm-hmm, from 6 to 7,000 enzymes of it or proteins? So is that the DNA plasmid that you're seeing, or a viral protein envelope with straight DNA plasmids that are like little arrows?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you seeing, I'm going to call it a pseudo-gelatinous mass that has the appearance of a parasite or any of these other life forms, but it's not of that nature, meaning it's not 100% of that entity.
Okay, very good. Well, this is this kind of split is to be expected in anything that comes on the scene that is new, mysterious, intriguing, frightening, and all the rest of it to people. So far, again, for you newcomers, Morgellons is not directly a fatal syndrome or condition. It has resulted tragically in some suicides. It has certainly laid waste to a number of lives. And this may be or may not be related to, we suspect it is, to the overall health of the individual and the stamina and integrity of the individual's immune system. That's a crucial part in this, or confronting any kind of invasive process.
Correct.
Okay.
It's getting the whole body, it's like we have all these food now for several years, almost 10 years, that it's recommended to take the fat out of all the food because you'll gain weight, et cetera. But at the same time, what if you had a nanotechnology that used fat so that if you didn't have enough of these other fats from your food,
right,
that you need to stimulate other mechanisms or to produce certain enzymes, then it attacks you directly in your mechanism, as we explained earlier,
mm-hmm,
within the cell.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm,
like I wonder every day, why is sunflower oil in all different potato chip products now?
Yeah, not to mention canola oil,
mm-hmm,
in the rest of them. Canola oil's everywhere, and if you do any research on canola oil on the internet, you'll know that it's not. You just don't want to go near it. Now, let me say one other thing, and then we're going to bring on Dr. Mike Castle next. He's another heroic individual who's worked very hard on this. He's exceptionally well known for his chemtrail research, and we're going to bring him on in just a minute. But the one other thing I want to mention, if we can get this in, and maybe I should just go to Mike first. No, let's do this first. Food. For those of you out there who still think you can actually eat the average American diet, supermarket processed foods that are grown in the most poisoned, toxic, nutritionally depleted soils on the planet, you better get with it and guess again. You cannot maintain a reasonable level of health and wellness any longer if you eat the normal American food fare. You must, M-U-S-T, must take a regimen of daily, highest quality nutritional supplements, or you're going to get sick, and you're going to get real sick, and many of you are going to die far too early in life. You must take supplements. And I'm not talking about Walmart junk supplements. I'm talking about high-quality, food-based, food-derived supplements, or you're not going to make it.
I agree. You have to get some kind of program like that, because now in the grocery stores, in one of Elton Haas's books, he just said that 70% of all the groceries, it doesn't matter if you go to an organic grocery store or what, is 70% is GMO.
Well, and that's by design, of course. The GM people are penetrating the organic community as fast as they can and contaminating crops and food and fruit. They don't
right.
give a damn about us.
But what I'm saying is that you're not getting your nutrition.
No, you're
not getting any of that when you have that type of food.
Well, look at the soils it comes out of. Right.
You're more susceptible to these unique diseases.
Right. The soils in this country are criminally hideous when you talk about factory farming. We'll do much, much more about this in the future, and we'll be making recommendations on the supplements that I take every day that are as good as I have ever seen in my life, and they have given me the kind of health I had when I was in my teens, and I'm only 25 now, but it's nice to remember. Okay, let's bring on Dr. Mike Castle now and say hello and welcome him back to the program. Hello, Mike.
Yes, hello, Jeff. Good evening.
Hi, Mike.
Good? Hello. Good to see you. Good to talk to you people again. I've just been sitting over here on this stump for about the last hour or so,
well,
enjoying the conversation.
Wanted you to hear everything so when you stepped in, you could make your own particular contribution. The last time we talked, your research, of course, points to a possible vectoring of Morgellons, probable vectoring of Morgellons,
yes,
as coming from the skies above us. You want to tell us the latest on your research in that respect?
Well, I think that the research that we've done so far has shown very positive attributes to there being some form of material that is not identifiable in its web, if you want to put it that way, but there is something mm-hmm. there that in fact tends to go through an incubation period and essentially hatch out. And I believe that is the fundamental basis of many of these things. But then again, you know, Jeff, there's one thing that's very clear about this is that if one collects the fibers, they shouldn't go playing with them a whole lot, because there's not a whole lot of materials on the face of this earth that will contain these things, because they have such radical mechanisms for mm-hmm. actually at the molecular level with virtually grafting with anything.
Wow.
Good point. Grafting within.
That's it. They do grab on, they graft, they attenuate themselves to it.
They mix their genetic entity
right.
with whatever they're carrying.
They swap genes.
With yours or whomever it may be. Plus all the materials that are, in fact, in the intestines, which is what you were talking about a moment ago,
right,
with the GMOs, and all that, in fact, who knows what could be the outcome of that there, pardon
well,
the pun.
Bacteria constantly swap genetic material just for openers, so this is really a piece of cake for this machine, too. When you said hatch out, I don't want you people out there to think that Dr. Castle is saying hatch out like a worm. This is not it. This is like
no.
a machine that makes its debut once it has assembled itself to the degree it needs to launch into the environment it's inhabiting.
I think debut would fit it a whole lot better, and that would be fitting for a machine, yes, a debut.
Okay. Right. All right.
But there are so many other manifestations of the vectors, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and the transport mechanisms, which you spoke with earlier. There seems to be a very positive hit when it comes to some type of risk assessment. When you're getting around sewer-tainted waters, there appears to be a much higher risk, even around the bugs that hang around those kind of places. In fact, or even more of a consequential risk if you get bitten or if they land on you. I mean, these things are microscopic. So
Mike, as we slide to the break, my opinion is any insect, especially any biting insect, is a viable and obvious vector candidate for spreading Morgellons.
I agree, 100%.
Okay, thank you. Stand by, we'll be right back. Okay, back with Dr. Hildegard Staniger and Dr. Mike Castle, talking about Morgellons. Mike is a practicing industrial polymer chemist with U.S. patents in coatings and adhesives. He is brilliant in his field as well. All right, Mike, I asked Hilde this question earlier. Since our first program here and all the work you've done and everything, and the government showing its predictable obstinance and obfuscation and reticence and unwillingness to treat this obviously and openly, and playing their typical games of delay and neglect. Where are we? Where are we in this issue?
Actually, my focus has been to develop an organization that specifically investigates and hopefully becomes somewhat of an oversight coming from a multi-discipline of various types of professionals that, in fact, have no industry linkage whatsoever. That's the problem, I believe, with the U.S. EPA. There's so many linkages to the industrial side of this because these are very, very large multinational corporations, and they have the leading technologies in all those fields to begin with.
Right.
So
right.
In this case here, there needs to be someone out here that is a referee, if you will, of, first of all, identifying these technologies from the perspective of their potential contaminant and properties. Because, I mean, it is a contamination, if you will, of an artificial intelligence.
And their, and their genetic intertwining and exchanging and, well, you could call it recombining with human bacteria, human cells. They literally apparently become part of the human organism. And I remember a lot, Cliff Mickelson talking about it's as if there's another intelligence or presence living in your body with you. And that kind of suggests what Dr. Hilde was saying about these things genetically melding with the person who has it.
Right. And I believe that there is a collective artificial intelligence influence on those people who, in fact, know that they have this type of manifestations of this disease.
Even if it's an let me say one thing. Even if it's an intelligence that these little nano devices have, no matter how they manifest themselves, what configuration, an intelligence, a drive to assert themselves, to certainly not be evicted, to certainly make their presence known, and maybe they're waiting for instructions. Maybe they have another agenda. We don't know, but that's the idea. If I'm correct.
Well, and if you look at some of these photographs that has been posted through your shows, taken by a number of individuals, and some of the photomicrographs, those are just perfect little nano antenna arrays.
They certainly are.
They live to receive. I think that's probably what their mantra
And
could
we're
be.
Living in a fishbowl of electromagnetic, cell phone, megahertz, gigahertz, radiation now, EMF, 24/7, that penetrates every cell in the body, and these little receptors, if that's what they are, and they certainly appear to be, at least on the surface of it, are just ripe for picking up any of this stuff. You know, in England, and now in Germany, in England first, they're banning Wi-Fi from kids' classrooms. And you know how many people listening are able to hook up their laptop and pick up Wi-Fi from their next-door neighbor or two neighbors away? This is cell phone stuff. This is cell phone radiation.
Yes. Yes, it is. The unique thing about what I've heard recently about some of these other, let's just call them psychiatric manifestations, that's something that interests me a lot, and I'm hoping that one of these in the medical field, specifically in the psychiatric or the psychological side of the nature of this, because there appears to be changes in the personalities, no fundamental reason, no organic reason for it. So, you know, it would lead us to believe that there is, in fact, somewhat of a of an all-encompassing creature, if you will, whatever you would like to call it, or a machine. It just depends on which one you'd like to think of it being. I mean, it could, in fact, artificially implant its own, whatever's intelligence it's got, and graft that, if you will, with a human's own intelligence. Now, the question is, is that good or bad? Mm-hmm. The question I got, where is George Carlin when you really need him?
Yeah, good, good. Let me ask you another question, back to Hilde and to you as well. Mike Castle, this organism, if it is indeed a nanotech device, could it not, in some of its 90-some-odd configurations or symptoms, take on the form of a little nanotechnology, robotic worm-like thing to maybe fool people? Is that a possibility?
Yes, that could happen.
Certainly.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's technology out there that can use as, you know, its own internal camouflage or other appearances.
Right.
Yes.
Right, perfect. Okay.
That's a good word right there, camouflage.
Well, it's stealth camouflage, yeah.
Genetic camouflage.
Chimera. You name it. Hildy, we have a break coming up, but when we come back, I want to talk about your new clinic in L.A. Why don't you go ahead and give the contact information when we come back and tell us what you hope to accomplish there in just a couple minutes. Stand by.
Thank you.
We'll be right back as we continue with Morgellons special number 10. Okay, and we are back and talking with Dr. Mike Castle, Dr. Hildegard Staniger. All right, Hildy, what about your new clinic in Los Angeles? Give the address and the phone number and what you hope to accomplish by offering to consult with people the medical community doesn't know what to do with or doesn't want anything to do with.
Right. Our new clinic, which is specializing in toxicology and far infrared therapy, is located in Larchmont Village, which is 415 and 3/4, which is the fraction, North Larchmont Boulevard, is Los Angeles, California, 9000, that's 304. And the phone number is 323-466-2599. And we're looking at helping individuals that need to get help, schedule an appointment, and get them on the road to getting rid of that assembler, as I call it.
Yes, the assembler.
If they have Morgellons.
Yeah. Well, when you go see Dr. Staniger, any of you folks in Southern California, you will at least be able to understand what it is you're dealing with. Okay, we're not talking about.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean you.
we've come a long way. Meaning we try to do certain tests that can at least show the individuals what's happening with their body, what's going on, answer their specific questions, and support them the best way we can.
Right.
With everything, because money's tight for everyone. So
it sure is.
We try to help whichever way we can.
And getting tighter all the time.
Yeah.
Food is now 10 to 15% inflation rate. That's the actual inflation rate of food in the United States. 10 to 15 already. We're headed to hyperinflation. So things are not going to get easy. All right. Now, back to Mike Castle. One or two more items, Mike, that I want to bring Jan Smith on. So what else do you want to put on the table right now?
Well, I just wanted to, you asked me earlier about the ongoing and what we're doing, and I think I mentioned that the focus is to put a very good organization together to, in fact, act as a investigatory and oversight. And I believe that will have something to do with, of course, Hilda, and a number of other people that have been on your show, and quite a few that haven't. And our intent is to identify, and also start the process of going to trying to limit the proliferation of this technology into other fields. And I'm sure that most of this is going to be international in scope, but I don't know about you, but I can just stand back and I can just barely see the trees. So you know, we'll start here stateside and then gradually go on further. But somebody needs to answer the questions if they have them. That's the scary part. We're not sure if we ask the people that invented these technologies, if we find out, and then we will. We found out quite a bit already. We want to know how you turn these things off.
Right.
Or what is the mechanisms or the sequence of the protocols or whatever. And that's where we're going on this, because no one seems to have an interest, including the CDC, in just getting to it. They still want to prove that the disease exists. And quite frankly, there's no time for that.
No, I agree with you. That's a good point.
There's just too many other things that one could be involved with, and one of them is someone needs to be taking a serious look of how to stop the proliferation of this particular type of contamination, because it involves artificial intelligence, and it is a, quote-unquote, a non-life form. that's brand new to us.
You bet.
And everybody else.
Very well said.
And that's a very good point that Dr. Castle brought out, because I don't know if he has the same situation with some colleagues that they have our group, meaning like our age group, what we went to school, we never had this in school. And at the same time, if you don't start reading and start getting books and start opening them up and reading about it, you can't even talk the terminology. Just look at what, from the beginning of your shows to the present date, we've all learned a lot of new vocabulary.
All true. Now, Mike, you phrased that very well. Cliff Mickelson has said other things earlier, and others involved in this are trying to get a handle on it. With Hildy's new clinic now, we have a real focal point in Los Angeles where an awful lot of people can come and at least get some kind of guidance, right?
Yeah, it's easy to get to compared to my other facilities that I've been associated with, so it helps the area better.
Okay. All right.
If I can just add also, Jeff.
Of course you can.
There needs to be somewhat of a attention paid to one little detail that I'll give you right now. I carry a green stick. It's a small little green stick. I took the bark off, and I just carry the stick around. For some reason, every time I look at that stick, I'll go do something else because there's just something that wants to keep me procrastinating forever in getting things done on this very topic. And I think those people out there that think they may have the manifestation of this particular type of syndrome know exactly what I'm talking about. So if you just go get a little green stick, I think that would go a long way in saying, well, you took the time to get this, but
good.
At least it's something that reminds everyone that does that
right.
There is a cause here.
Right. Indeed,
we all need to look at this green stick in a different way.
Yeah. That's a good analogy. All right, let's is Jan Smith standing by?
Yes, I'm on. Can you hear me?
What have you been doing with yourself? Just sitting there being so quiet.
I'm just having a great time with my microscope.
Yeah. Jan Smith has been with us on all of our programs. She has had Morgellons now for, got to be close to 9 years, Jan?
10 now.
Time flies, eh? Jan is an heroic researcher who has supplied the world with many of the photographs you'll see at Rents.com, and I hope you'll take a look at them. These photographs, along with the information that Dr. Standinger, Dr. Mike Castle, and other doctors and others who have contributed so mightily to the program, and Cliff Mickelson is certainly one of them, have put pressure on the federal government to the extent that the CDC has had to, again, create what they call a task force. Who knows how many that is. In other words, an in-house body of yes men and women to look into this situation. Hell, all they have to do is listen to the programs and look at the pictures. They don't have to do much research. It's done for them. But anyway, we've done a lot, and Jan Smith has played a key role in that with her microscope and her amazing ability to capture these images of bizarre nanotechnology, machine-like, and some cases looking like living claws. I mean, these are bizarre things. We'll talk to Jan as we continue in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to remind you that at the bottom of Dr. Standinger's paper, you'll find a little link that says photos, and you can take a quick look there and see there are three photos there. We might be able to get back and talk about those real quickly after the break here with Gilbert. Okay, time flies. Right back with you, Dr. Hildegard Standinger, Dr. Mike Castle, and Jan Smith with us. The Morgellons photos accessible by clicking on the photos link at the bottom of Dr. Standinger's paper. Look right under her name in guests at rents.com. There are three of them, Hilde. You want to tell us what they are quickly, please? First one is nano arrays, specimens from Jan's body. It's a photo of a close-up item. It has two red X's on them. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I remember them. I received a number of pictures, and I don't have access to the computer where I'm at right now.
Okay, all right, we'll leave
so
it up to the
I'm
folks.
I'm sorry, and I apologize to the audience.
We'll take a look at the photos ourselves, and let me go to Jan right away. Jan, the... What really has to scare the dickens out of most people is that these fibers move.
Oh,
and
yes.
you have proven this. You are the pioneer. You showed it. You've put videos up on YouTube. We have them on the site. Tell us about the moving nanotechnology tubes of Morgellons.
Okay. Well, there's two different things that I have discovered that move. One of them is the nanotechnology tubes, and many people would say those were the worms or the modal strands. In a closer look at a paper that Dr. Steininger sent me called Advanced Technology, there's an item very similar to that that's an actual advanced type of nanotube that looks very much like the worms.
I have it. It's called Advanced Materials.
Right. And on that page, there's a picture of something that almost looks like a strand of beads or something, but it's an actual nanotube that very much resembles the worm-like things that I have.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's one that has what looks like pincers on the end of it.
Right.
Jan Hilde can probably explain that one better than I could.
Yeah, that was like a claw or which they used to gather materials within the structure that, within the entity that it's placed in. And what I found very interesting about that is that when you look at the shape of those, I'm going to call it nano claws, it looks very much to very much like the pictures that we saw in the very beginning of the second show that we did with you.
Yeah.
Number six. Meaning if you took out all the gel or took out what the structure is, just looked at the bare skeleton of it.
Right. Now this is not to say, dear friends, that human beings do not get parasites, do not get worms. The human body can easily inhabit and play host to well over 130 different kinds of parasites. We know this. There are parasites in the skin of people, in their internal organs, in their joints, but this, Morgellons, is something entirely unprecedented. It's not been seen before. And as Hilde said now, we don't know how many nanotechnology devices have been created in this worldwide rush into this unknown world of nanotech. Thousands of them. Thousands and thousands of them. And more all the time. And they're rushing to the patent office, and they're just amazingly inept at trying to... The world government should be... All countries, all world governments, all local governments should be looking at this very, very carefully, and they're not. They're just not. Too much money involved, I guess. Same old story.
It's a new business. It's the race for... Like, we had the Industrial Revolution, we had the race for space, now it's the race of the nano, meaning... The micro world.
Okay, Jan Smith. Motile fibers. I remember the first time I saw one of your videos
right.
of the little white fibers. One of them was moving. And
right.
I just said to myself, oh, my. Oh, my.
Now, people with Morgellons have that. And naturally, everybody can only use their own point of reference from what they've learned throughout their life. And so normally if you see something undulating like a worm, in your mind you're saying, this is a worm, because you don't have any other point of reference.
Good point.
And, I know for me, nanotechnology has been a new subject that I've just gotten into, you know, in the past few months. And before this, I was very green. I thought that nanotechnology was going to look like the inside of a transistor radio, and it really doesn't look like it at all. It looks just like what's inside of us.
How much of a power do you need in a microscope to observe fibers easily? 50, 60? A 10 power isn't going to do it in most cases, correct?
You can vaguely see them at a 10 power, but 60 is a good size.
So if you see them at 10, they're granddaddy-sized fibers. They're big. They're real big.
Right. You can't see too much detail at 10.
Right, understand.
And at 200, you can see quite a bit of detail.
Right, okay.
On this page that I'm really hoping that you put some emphasis on is this ChemBot, because this was a one-time find on my part. And throughout the time that I've had this disease, I have seen the residue of this, but I have never found a whole one. This is kind of like a gift from God.
All right,
frankly.
Let's go look at
intact.
That. Look at Hilde's paper, Morgellons Nano 911, A Foreign Invader. Click on that again. Scroll down to the bottom of that paper. look for the little link on the left that says photos. Click on photos, and there are three photos. Go down to the middle. The middle photo says Chembot. The middle photo, specimen from Jan's body. All right, for those of you not online, it looks like a bunch of little round, blackish ball bearings stuck together.
Well,
right.
Well actually, with the higher magnification that I had, I have a scientific microscope, but unfortunately, it doesn't take pictures. And with my scientific microscope, I could clearly see that every single one of these little round ball bearings that you're mentioning was a silver color, and they all were faceted. So that when I saw this, this was like the most excited I ever got. I was on the phone with Hildy, and Shoshona so fast I couldn't even believe it.
Okay, faceted, that means, folks, they're not smooth bubbles. They have facets or flat sides. Now, were these facets geometrically perfect or suspiciously perfect looking, or were they rather random?
It was hard for me to tell because my magnification wasn't quite that good. But the matrix around them was definitely a black material, which was a different material than the little round orbs. And if anyone would look into a nano, Hildy would tell you what to look up. But this is a typical shape for nanoparticles. This is a typical configuration of how these nest, one row nests into the other row.
Right. And there's a NIOSH website, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, that has now it's called nanotechnology, and it's like a nano library, and it's, you plug in nanoparticle, and it gives you all kinds of pictures and what's the references of the people who have invented it and the papers that they're publishing.
Okay,
on
so
it.
The Chembot is identifiable amongst the nano literature. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Oh, it is. Who developed it, and what was it developed for? Do we know, Jan?
Well, Hildy can give you all the details on that. I'm the picture taker, and she's the figure outer.
A lot of it was done in universities. A lot was done in MIT and those areas to develop it for new technology that would aid in oils, aid in medicine.
Drug delivery.
Yeah, drug delivery.
Oh, really?
Systems.
Yes. Okay, so that may be some kind of a delivery parcel or a delivery protocol of some kind, a nano protocol for delivering something.
Nano drug delivery systems are big ventures in companies, hospitals, et cetera, for the simple reason that they want to give less chemotherapy agents or less radiation. So they couple it with a nanotechnology so it can be, quote-unquote, delivered at lower dose to the proper area where the disease is. But with everything, we still, even with endocrine disruptors, we still have to go to the bathroom. So where does this stuff go?
Of course, we pass it on into the environment, into the oceans and the lakes, the rivers, and the other life forms on the planet are equally, obviously, potential hosts for all of these things. So this is a planet-wide species. It doesn't discriminate. Flora, fauna, it could be in anything. Mm-hmm. These things literally could infest the world, and I see no reason to suspect that they won't in time. Now, the larger question here, ladies and gentlemen, is this an accident? Is it something being done intentionally? Or is it both? What do you think, Hildy, first?
Well, with anything, if you have a lot of good masterminds out there, whoever they may be, a lot of different experiments could be created. A lot of different answers to whatever they're studying could be created.
Okay. Mike, any ideas on this? Intentional or accidental or both?
I think it could be a little bit of both, Jeff. We do have information that says clearly that, for instance, the CIA was very involved in, I know I'm not supposed to say it on public radio, but they were very involved early on in chemtrails. But when you break down, well, just what were those operations and what were their intentions in doing? I clearly suspect that, and there's a number of us that have discussed this, I clearly suspect that that is part of one of their premier programs is experimentation to some degree, and I believe many of those experiments, in fact, may have went a little bit south, because
right.
there's also drug enforcement technology in this mix of nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that, that we've identified that in the literature as this is a nanotechnology that seems to be have been crossed with a fungus of some sort.
How and furthermore, when one studies BSL 2, 3, 4, or even BSL 5 labs, and honestly looks at the precautions and the various kinds of security, you know that mistakes happen. You know that these organisms, bacterial and viral, can get loose. And nanotechnology organisms being far smaller, just imagine how easy it would be to sneak some out of a lab, for goodness sake, if someone wanted to do that. Or up a chimney, and they don't get burned up, because we know that these fibers can withstand temperatures, thanks to Jan Smith, of up to 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit. Yes. So they can go right up a so-called viral or bacterial or any other kind of secret technology disposable incinerator, and they're not being disposed of. They simply get a free ride up and out and over the neighborhood or over the city, which happens to be around it. So
yes, I think you might be interested to know the actual size of that chembot was pretty much the size of a period you'd put up at the end of a sentence with a pen. And so that was my highest magnification that I could do anything with.
Gotcha.
This thing could not even be seen with the naked eye. And
very
then to
good.
Have it have all the intricacies of every one of these tiny crystals was amazing to me.
All right. Hi, welcome back. We have a full house tonight. Glad you're along. Our 10th special program on Morgellons. Dr. Hildegard Steininger, Ph.D., Dr. Mike Castle, Ph.D., and the heroic Jan Smith are with us. Mike, if there's anything else you'd like to add tonight, I want to thank you for being here. One final statement, then we've got to bring on one more guest. We only have three lines available, so if you want to put something on the table for us to remember this time around and look forward to our next visit, that would be great.
Well, just putting on the table again that we're going to be putting our heads together and getting an organization that probably involves some of our some of the environmental professionals, the medical professionals, other different fields. There has to be a coming together somewhere, and
agreed.
That's what we're going to be doing.
Okay. Very good. Mike.
And I thank you, Jeff, for your time and your diligence and your excellent, excellent works.
Well, my pleasure,
I've been
sir.
Listening closely. You've had some just really magnum guests on this program.
Well,
there's
thank
not a whole
you.
Lot of people that don't listen to you anymore.
Well, thank you, sir, very much, Mike. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Take care. We'll
thank
talk
you.
To you soon.
Good night.
And let me make a very special announcement now. We want to thank Shoshana Allison for her heroic effort in doing so much for so many people. It's almost incalculable, but she once again has helped produce this program tonight. And thank you, Sho. And get some
definitely.
Sleep as soon as it's over. Don't fall asleep yet. It's been up for well over a day now straight. All right. Now, what we're going to do is bring a young lady on named Katie. And Katie has had Morgellons for about 15 years. She's been very busy. She's researched and found a lot of very interesting, almost exact answers to things. Her nanotechnology research has brought her here this evening, and we want to get her mind on this issue as well. So standing by with Hilde and Jan, let's say hello to Katie.
Hello, Katie.
Hi, Katie.
Hello.
Hi, Katie. All right, Katie, tell us, let's just go back very quickly to the beginning. When did you realize there was something wrong with you, and how did it manifest itself?
It was right around 1991, 92, and it started, I thought it was like scabies, And but then they didn't heal. The sores didn't heal. I had them on some on my stomach, some on my arms, my legs, and I looked like I had chicken pox almost on my arms. And
can you describe, Katie, these little lesions? I tried to earlier. They tend to be, correct me if I'm wrong, but I know they're different configurations, but it's almost like a little pink raised area of the skin that apparently bothers people. They feel things, and they just kind of want to scratch at it and pick at it. And then you tear the top of this thing off, and it just kind of looks kind of like gooey and just clear, liquidy, and it doesn't get infected. It doesn't scab over easily, and it usually leaves a white, pigmentless scar. Is that the kind of thing you had?
Yes, on my arms. If I look at my arms now, today, the scars from it, I have all these white spots.
There you go.
And there's little shapes and all kinds of things on there.
Right, right.
And my legs, too. Now, my legs, they turned dark and sort of stayed that way. The pigment definitely changed. But they're still there. The scars are still there. They don't go away.
Okay, and it's the kind of thing I've heard so many times. It's just that, like, all of a sudden you'll want to start scratching at an area. You'll feel something that isn't quite right, and you'll scratch at it, and then what happens?
It feels like something has bitten you, and sometimes you'll think tick, or you'll think chiggers. I don't know if people have ever had chiggers. Those travel under the skin, and this seems to travel under the skin because there'll be another spot a little ways, like a chigger does.
And it's kind of a subtle thing at times,
yes,
too. It doesn't have to be like a real big, oh, I got bitten. It's just something very minor.
No. And you may, you say, oh, gee, what was that? If it was a tick, you know, you try, of course, try to get the tick out. But if it's, if you can't get it out, a lot of times I'll put ointment on it just to draw it out, and you think, oh, good, it's going to come out. Well, no. It keeps spreading, and then it'll go deeper in, and you can feel it almost next to the bone.
Wow. Now, the idea of scarring of the skin is so common, and Jan, you've been there, so many photographs. These lesions, scratched open, whatever, that don't get infected, that eventually heal, leave a white mark. The melanin is destroyed somehow.
Yes.
It's gone. So that's indicative of a fairly deep involvement. It's not just a surface layer. This goes down to the base levels of the skin, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And if you see someone who has white scars, about the size of a pea, a grain of rice, well, small, but a lot of them, some can be bigger, it's usually indicative not of acne scarring, because acne scarring leaves deep craters. These often leave rather smooth results to the skin. They don't leave craters, but they discolor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
All
yes.
Right. Okay, so you had this going on, and then what happened?
Well, it traveled. I had legs at one time, arms, back, shoulder, across the shoulders, and then the one that was really horrible was when it got on the ears, on the earlobe, and it felt like it was going inside the ear, and I would hear clicking in my ear. It would travel down my jawbone on the left side, and just huge areas there. I've got one, circular, probably about an inch, circular, near the ear, but it felt like almost like a worm crawling through the bone and then down through the skin that way. But it would stop for a while, and I'd say, oh, it's healing. Oh, great, wonderful. Oh, no, 3 days later, it's moving again. So it was like almost I kind of associated it with the clicking in the ears. And there would be little bumps on my ears that would just be so itchy.
Mm-hmm. So these things, what you're saying is the skin manifestation of Morgellons can ebb and flow. It's not consistent. It can go away for a day or a week or a month and then come back. This is
but
what
it,
I'm
saying. The thing will be either deep or down in at that point, and it may have healed over the outside a bit, but it goes deeper in. And then you got the layers like Jan had talked about before on one of your other shows. where there's different layers. And but to me, there seems to be some kind of calcium involved. And I think there is a natural process, like a nanobacteria, that can create like a pleomorphism type thing from calcium, from calcium materials, like diatoms or, you know, things at the bottom of the ocean.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay, now, Jan, she mentioned something that is fascinating, and that is the idea that these things could be felt crawling along her jawbone, crawling everywhere. This is common with Morgellons, folks. These would be, in all likelihood, would they not, the motile fibers moving around through the body? Is that your, would that be your estimation?
That's what I have found, and the motile fibers that I have a specific shape, and one end is always very sharp and pointed like a hypodermic, and the other end's quite blunt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the fibers that move do have a configuration for moving through cellular tissue. With
those
a
particular
sharp
ones do, yeah. They very much do, and sometimes I would get a sensation that I had an injection, but it was coming from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
What
and
color?
Hilly described that in her paper as well.
What color are these fibers that have the pointed end and the blunt end on the other end?
The ones that I have are usually clear to white, and they have sort of like, they almost look like they have compartmental parts in them. I was doing a little bit of research, and there's something called a nano pea pod that it very much resembled, but it's a configuration of some nano stuff that I had found, and maybe Hilde would know about that.
Yeah, it has a direct compartmentization where you can, it's like a tube, and then you can see the compartments over it, or within it, rather, inside of it.
That's really amazing to contemplate, and there are pictures of these things out there.
And when you first get these, the compartments seem empty, and then as you have it, they start filling with the black material.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Your best guess, Katie, after all these years of study and so forth, is that is the genesis of what we call Morgellons from one type of nanotechnology item or multiple types, or is it one progenitor that can take on all kinds of different shapes? This is all guesstimates now and just total random projection. What do you think? Was it one thing that turns into a lot of things, or is it several different things that get into the body?
Well, I know the TI neoplasmid from the agrobacterium that was put in the GM crops, that is used to change the genes in a lot of crops. Now,
Here, we have to take a break. But in sum, what you're saying is that there is a nanotechnology device that actually facilitates or causes genetic mutation in crops? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
All right, approximately. Well, we'll come back and delineate on that in just a minute with Katie as we continue our 10th special on Morgellons. Okay, and we're back. All right, Katie, tell us more about your nanotech research and your ideas and concepts about what this whole Morgellons thing might be. If there is a connection to GM, fine. Let's hear that, too.
The one I'm thinking of with the agrobacterium is if they used an actuator to actually change the plant's DNA, they put it right in the plant. We could be just eating it, not knowing it. You know, that could be one way. Another way, Jan mentioned those chembots. Now, and Dr. Hilde talking about the compounds and the changes that go on chemically. And I keep going back to calcium carbonate and its electrical qualities.
Right.
And also that silica or silicon is a good insulator. Or a good conductor, I should say, of electricity. And I keep wandering off into the electricity. And I think in my mind it's biochemical, and it involves physics. It's all three of those put together.
Okay. All
a
right.
Convergence of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Mm. All right. So what else did Morgellons do to you, Katie? And what did you try to do along the way to get help from organized medicine, if any?
Oh, I had been to a number of doctors. Some told me, just quit your scratching. And then I had other ones tell me that I was delusional. And I even went to a university. And the head of the infectious disease department there spent 2 minutes with me telling me that I was delusional. I went to a dermatology clinic, a big one, and they told me the same thing. Then I had another doctor who gave me Vioxx, which could have killed me because of the
indeed
heart
it could have, yeah.
connection to the Vioxx. And I had pain so bad in my from my neck up to the back of my head that I couldn't do anything. Uh-huh. And so they gave me that. And finally I said, I'm going off everything. That's it.
That saved your life, probably.
And yes. Yes, I so I do a lot. I use a lot of natural products. I've when the pain and itching gets bad, I'll use Vicks. I'll use essential oils. But
there are some topical anesthetics too. Procaine you can get sometimes over the counter, which can help on occasion. But it's difficult. It's a difficult thing. You could also get possibly. If you go to a doctor, you may end up with prednisone, which you don't want to take. There are so many things that they'll try. Do they try that on you, too?
Yes, they tried that on me, too. And, oh, my God, coming off that is awful.
Yeah, well, that could kill you,
too. It's really awful.
Yeah.
And I don't like going that route at all.
Okay. Jan, tell me more about your current research and what you're finding out. And the more you look, the more you seem to find out. You're quite the troublemaker.
I know. Well, if you remember a few shows ago, I had what at the time I was calling a callus tentacle type thing, and underneath some of the crust on my skin were these protrusions that kind of looked like stalagmites, except they were made out of the gray goo, as Drexler right. would have called it back in the. He was one of the pioneers in the nano business, and that the silicon makes a kind of a goo that forms a shape. Basically, what I had found was that I had had a really persistent lesion on my knuckle for a long time, and over the course of time, I realized that the more I attacked the lesion, the more these protrusions would grow. And as a matter of fact, the chembot came out of one of these protrusions. The protrusion had specialized into what's called a nano horn. And in the center of the picture there, you would see a projection of some kind of a yellowish tissue, and that was the end of the nano horn. So they're growing inside of the nanohorns in your body. So at one point I just thought, well, I'm going to put something under the microscope and throw some saline on it. And I kind of got the shock of my life because one of the, I had the lesion I had on my knuckle was about the size of a nickel. And if you can imagine how many breadcrumbs it would take to cover that and compress them all together, that was how many little individual critters were living on my knuckle. And as soon as I put these little tiny pieces of skin under the microscope and put saline on them, they began to move. And each one of them is individual. The ones that were in a cluster began to separate, and they go in different directions and do different things. And they each have a foot, and they each have an antenna.
Oh, my.
So when people pick these off of themselves, I think that they're subconsciously getting an innate message that something's living on my body. I need to get it off. It's not much different than if you knew that you had some kind of an insect burrowing under your skin. It gives you that
right.
same feeling.
Right. Exactly. Well, and the people who have written to me, people I know, people I've heard about, guests on the program, all have said pretty much the same thing. They feel as if there's another intelligence on their body, and they want these. That's why they pick at these lesions.
Right.
They want
right.
this, whatever it is, they want it to hell out of there.
Well, they must have some kind of electrical signal of their own that signals our body that says something's, you know, this is an extraneous thing that doesn't belong here.
Absolutely. Why not? I mean, this is an electrical issue. The human body is electrical first. and chemical second. We are electrical beings.
Mm-hmm.
And something like this of a machine or nanotechnology, nature and configuration and profile would obviously interact electrically, bioelectrically, somehow with the human body. And God help those poor folks where it gets into it becomes neuropathic. It gets into the whole neurology of the body, the brain. It's tough. It can hole up anywhere and focus and seemingly concentrate on different areas of the body.
And so, thank you for putting the link to those videos. There are videos that show this on YouTube, and you have the link on your site.
Very good. We'll be right back. Okay, back with Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Jan Smith, and Katie. Now, if you all can go to Rents.com and reload the page, we've added something new in the last few minutes, thanks to James Neff and Shoshana Allison, who sent me that article I alluded to earlier. It was in a PDF form. But I want you to take a look at the link Photos. It's right there at the bottom of Guests, and you'll see the actual three photos from Hildy's paper.
Mm-hmm.
But the third photo has the inset of the claw-like device, which is a nano device now, keep in mind, juxtaposed against a picture, one of Jan's pictures, of these claw-like devices coming out of the underside of one of the coverings of one of your lesions, right, Jan?
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
These things are enough to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, folks. They are claws. There's no other. They look like parrot claws or some claws. Now, look at the nano device that's inset in the picture. Scroll down below that, and you'll see three pictures. Take a look at the picture with the long, long, thin nanotube, and then there's an inset, C, with a nanotube with a claw on the end of it. Okay? Now, these are 200 nanometers wide. That's it. You can see this. There's a scale there. And the little nanotube, Jan Smith, is perfectly segmented.
Mm-hmm.
All the
mm-hmm.
way, as you pointed out. Now, the other item, which shows a tube that isn't segmented, shows individual... They're not striations, they're small fibers within the tube itself, some of the fibers sticking out and so forth. These are machines, folks. These are not worms. These are so tiny, 200 nanometers. What is the width of a nanometer, approximately, anybody? How much of a human hair? What is it? I don't know what it is. It's at least a thousandth of the diameter of a human hair. It's talking tiny stuff here. One micron is a virus. These are way, way, way smaller. So anyway, look at the pictures from the scientific paper that they are taken from. And if you wish to download the PDF article itself, it's from Nanoscience. You can read it. It's just two pages long. And read these. Now, the other picture has A, B, E, on the top, C and D on the bottom. And Jan, if you know these pictures, you'll recognize right away B
is the one.
is the one that is an exact ringer for the first picture at the top of the three from Hildy's paper, where you see the two red X's. These are nanoarrays. There's an inset there. You'll see it on the left with an X on it, which shows what these things are. Scroll down to the bottom.
I think Hildy might have even said that these may be communication arrays. Am I right,
right.
Hildy?
Right. That's what I was talking about when we discussed it over the phone.
Right.
When you sent them to me.
Because in this bigger picture, if you could see the whole item, there's a whole lot of this extra big nano wire around it, and it looks like polyoptic. It's very clear and crystalline. There's not much of it showing in this picture, but I have other pictures where there's a huge amount of that, and it definitely looks like it's connected to these arrays, and it must serve a purpose of communication. This object also has a copper eye, and we didn't get to see that one in this either, but I will send those on to you if you want them.
Yeah, I'd like to see.
It's definitely a metallic copper eye type-looking thing.
Like an eye.
Yeah, this thing almost has the shape of like a teddy bear, and I call it one eye, but That's what I call it, old copper eye. But I'll send you the pictures of the whole thing at some point, and you can see the whole thing in its entirety because it's quite complex.
All right. Well, again, this is at the nano level. We're talking at the molecular level, in scales less than 1 micrometer. Normally, 1 to 1,000 nanometers. They're building devices at this level. Okay. This is just—it's absolutely amazing. Do a little bit of research, avail yourself of the data that we have offered you, and all of our wonderful guests have put together. All right, Katie. So, in all the years of dealing with this, 15 years, when did you find out that other people had the same kind of thing? When did you find out you weren't alone?
That was right around 2002.
And I assume you probably shed a few tears of relief knowing you weren't alone and you weren't crazy.
Oh, yeah. I had first gotten on the National Unidentified Skin Parasite, and then I moved over to the MRF, and then I registered with them. So I'm one of the one of the first registers on the MRF Foundation. And then I've just stuck with their work, and you know, they send me updates every so often, but the CDC works very slow.
the CDC
so
works only when
I've
it wants
sent
to.
Letters. I've sent letters to all my Congress people. I sent letters to actually to the White House too. I sent them to people in the Senate, in the Congress, and the CDC, and the local health departments, and the high. One time I went on a kick and just sent to a whole bunch of universities trying to get some scientists, and I didn't get much back. I didn't hear much back.
So, nothing.
A lot of letter writing.
Uh-huh.
I did a lot of that.
Right. Okay, Jan, so you've had this 10. Katie's had it 15.
Right.
You're still going strong. You're not going to let this thing beat you down completely. It's not easy.
Oh, no.
There are some who do cave in, tragically. Yeah. They can't deal with it. They sequester themselves. They must feel tainted.
I think a lot of those people probably are people that don't understand what they have and don't have any hope, you know?
How could they? They couldn't. They
no,
don't know what they have. They're alone. They don't.
No,
they don't
I mean,
have
the first 5 years I had this. I had no clue. But I'm feisty. So thank God for that.
Oh, indeed. All right, stand by. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. We will be putting this program up at rents.com free, as we always do with these, for your enlightenment. It'll be an MP3 file, so you can listen to it, share it, pass it around. We do fully intend to get to the bottom of this. It is quite clearly a human-created issue. Therefore, humans somewhere are responsible for it. We'd like to find out who they are, and we'd like to find out how to handle it. We'll be back. Okay, and we're right back. All right, we have one segment left to go. Let me go back to Dr. Hildegard Stanninger, Ph.D., who's opening a clinic in Los Angeles now, and who welcomes all who think they may have Morgellons. I would suggest you call and make an appointment. We don't want a line at the door, because in Southern California alone, there could be hundreds of thousands of people who currently have this, and maybe many more who are about to get it or who have it and don't even know it. So let's go ahead, Hildy, and tell the people again how they can get in touch with you. And it's kind of, I don't mean to laugh, but to hear anything in Los Angeles called a village kind of amuses me.
Oh. It's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's 5 million people live there.
Yes. It's a small little community within, Largemont Village is between Koreatown and also Hancock Park and
What you're saying, it's surrounded by 5 million people, but it's a village.
I
get you. Go ahead. It's
right.
All right. Just having a little fun here.
Yeah, it's 415 3/4 North Largemont Boulevard, Los Angeles, California 90000. That's 304. And the phone number is 323-466-2599. And the hours are from 9 to 6 o'clock. And if appointments have to be done on Saturdays, they're arranged or in the evening.
Very good. Okay. Give the phone number again.
It's, I keep forgetting it. It's 323-466-2599.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm positive.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. It's hard when you're setting up a new place. But your aim is to bring as many people in there as you can. You're not working for the federal government. You're not out to collect names. You're not going to violate anyone's anonymity, privacy, security, or anything else. You're just trying to help people understand what they have so we don't have so many Americans living the lives of quiet desperation and, quite frankly, emotional and psychological disability in many cases.
Correct.
They don't know what they have, and they're being interfered with neurologically, emotionally, intellectually, you name it. They are being interfered with by another form of intelligence. So leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. And we want these people to talk, because if they can talk to someone and at least get their bearings and get an understanding about what they have, then these other issues can begin to be dealt with effectively. You can deal with them. But when you don't know and you're living in fear, well, how many Americans that have Morgellons are on SSRIs right now? We don't know, but it's a safe bet that it's hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
I'd bet. So I don't bet, but I'd project. All right. Katie, what do you want to leave us with tonight? Here we have just about 6 or 7 minutes left.
Well, I think if we educate ourselves enough to know what they are doing in physics today, physics is a very, very difficult thing to go into. You can see one side of this, and even chemistry, know about alchemy. What is alchemy? What are noble metals? What are non-noble metals?
Right.
They can substitute those for the real alchemy, and it's those things are dangerous when you do that. But education mainly on finding out what's under the sea, what's up in the air, basically physics, chemistry, and biology, because
right.
biology has changed, and they're trying to put chemistry into biology now and have it as one unit.
They certainly
so,
are.
I wasn't taught that way, either.
Right.
Biology's separate, chemistry's separate. Well, no, there's this convergence that is going on, and if people can understand where there's top-down nano and there's bottom-up nano,
mm-hmm.
and if they can understand those concepts, maybe they can see where these nanos can cross barriers. And hurt animals, people, plants, the earth itself.
Okay. All right. Well said. Let me remind everyone we're dealing with nanotechnology here, and it is something that is 100,000 times, okay, smaller than the human hair diameter. That's awfully small, folks. So if you're trying to look out and see these things with your naked eye or a 10 or 20 or a 100-power scope, it's not easy. These particular nanomachines do attain size that enable us to see them, though, easily. You can see them sometimes at 10, 20-power, 50, 60-power makes it much easier, as Jan said. Do they have handheld 50-power scopes, Jan? Or do you have to go to a table mount scope?
I think Dr. Spencer has one of those, doesn't he, Hildy?
He has one that is a lens that is connected to his computer that goes up to 200x at least, and he can expand it. I know Radio Shack, because I was gifted a little handheld device that I think it goes up to 60x.
That's pretty amazing. Do they have a light? Does it have a light with it?
It has a light with it and everything. It was very convenient.
That's the one I
carried used. Around.
Yeah.
Huh. All right. Well, that's something for you folks out there trying to see these things that you might want to pick up. Okay. 60 power. Good. We have just 6 minutes left. Jan?
Yeah?
Are we making progress on this to your satisfaction? Forget the government. We're doing this on our own. You guys are doing this on your own. I'm just sitting around here reporting.
Well, I'm kind of glad you mentioned that, because I would kind of like to get a couple of licks in here. I'm very concerned about the CDC's not just choosing Kaiser Permanente, but Kaiser Permanente has already submitted all of the tests they're going to run on the people, and I think I'd like to get Hildy's input on this, but I don't believe any of the tests that they're planning to run are going to be indicative of anything to do with this technology.
That's true. It didn't even have, like, a porphyria test, where you discussed earlier, Jeff, about, I call it the marbleization, where the pigments of the skin get lighter. And that's the result of the metals interacting with the porphyrias, and it causes like a bleaching reaction. And they didn't have stuff that you would look for in this technology.
Ah, okay. It,
you know, general test of cells and IgG, IgM, et cetera, looking for an immunological reaction. And we already know that it doesn't even stimulate the immune system, so how are you going to get an immune reaction when it's not even triggering it? And then they also had drug testing on it, meaning like for cocaine, crystal meth, et cetera.
Interesting. All right. If people come into your office and you're able to help them understand what they are dealing with, where do you go from there, Hildy?
Oh, what I go through, I explain, the majority, they have over 50 of those symptoms, or they're only lacking 3 of them. We go over what is physically going on with their body, and then also how their digestive tract is working, and getting them with the pro and prebiotics. With Jerusalem artichoke and a lot of nutritional supplement to build them up, but build them up fast,
right,
so that it can stimulate. And my whole goal is, in the beginning, once we identify that there is an assembler that's located in the intestinal tract, is to knock that assembler out so that then you can stop having it made. It's like recently there was a client of mine that wanted work done on this one lake that was as large as the state of Florida, but it had 172 tributaries going into it. So if you have all raw sewage or pollution going in, unless you can stop it, you're still going to have pollution in that bigger lake.
172 tributaries, and many of those were probably getting their sewage allotment dumped from communities along
correct,
the way.
Correct, correct. And
nice.
That's what I'm saying with the assembler. If you can knock that out, by knock it out meaning break it up so that the body will push out any foreign invader once it gets going with it.
Unless this foreign invader is an evader and has been given, programmed, built, designed to defeat the human immunological system. I don't mean to sound a negative note, but we don't know yet.
I agree.
But you've got, the healthier you are, without question, the better you're going to be able to deal with this.
Correct. And the least effect you will have, meaning it's like in the certain stages where they have the little black pepper seeds-like-looking thing, they may have that versus it connecting and making the fibers.
Now, what does a little black pepper seed look like, and what magnification would you need to see it?
When it comes out, you can see it with your naked eye.
So it's just sitting right at the skin surface?
Yes.
It's a little, like a little oval or elliptical round black thing?
Yes.
I was just wondering, Hildy, are any of those black pepper seeds anything to do with the Chembot? Because I know people have specifically said that they've had black specks, but they've also had glitter. And I think the Chembot could possibly be a glitter type thing.
Definitely could be breaking it up, meaning breaking the Chembot.
Right. Okay. I don't think they stay this way very long.
The black, little black pepper-like seeds, little like a little caraway seed or something, right at the surface of the skin.
Poppy seed, more like a
little poppy seed.
Seed,
right.
Poppy seed.
All right. Katie, thank you very much. We have to go in a hurry. I appreciate you for being here and for all you've done. Thank you, Katie.
Well, thank you.
And Jan Smith, I don't know how to thank you, so I'll just say thanks and talk to you soon. You're just a hero.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for everything.
Oh, really. My pleasure. And Dr. Hilde, we have to run, and best of luck with the new clinic, and we'll talk to you soon again as well.
And thank you very much.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
And good night to all of you. We'll be back in 21 hours.